Liftoff will start in T-minus 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.
And welcome back to a new episode of ESA Explores. In our ongoing series, we already had the chance to meet with members of the new ESA astronaut class of 2022. And today, I'm really pleased to introduce a very special guest to you who has already mastered the initial astronaut training phase and has successfully completed two space missions. Currently, he's leading the next generation of space explorers and managing astronaut operations at the European Astronaut Center in Cologne in Germany. So please join me in welcoming today ESA astronaut Alexander Gerst. Alexander is a member of the ESA astronaut class of 2009, and he's been to space twice. First in 2014 for his Blue Dot mission, and then in 2018 for his Horizons mission. During his Blue Dot mission, he made history as the first German and second European astronaut to command the International Space Station. Let's hear from Alexander about the training journey and the future plans for our new astronauts. I'm your host, Laura Zumühlen, and this is ESA Explores. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the ESA Explores podcast.
Hi, Laura.
It's very nice to have you here today. How are you doing?
Thanks for the invitation. Doing really well.
So you're an astronaut, of course. You have a lot of experience flying, and now you're head of the astronaut operations here at the European Astronaut Center. Could you very briefly share with us a bit about your journey, like from flying on two space missions and now to your current role that you have here?
Yeah, for me, it's a great privilege to be leading this fantastic team because it allows me to use some of the experience that I gained on my two missions to the International Space Station and help my future colleagues or now colleagues to prepare for their rides into space. And therefore, it's one of the best jobs I can imagine.
And what does it mean, actually? So what does a head of astronaut operations do?
Well, for one, I'm still an active astronaut, so that means I need to keep a little training updated. So once in a while, I have to do proficiency trainings for robotics or EVA training or do flying. But then for leading this team here at the European Astronaut Center, the astronaut operations team, it's actually split in three parts. First part is helping the new class of astronauts who have just graduated from basic training to prepare for their upcoming flights that hopefully come soon. They should hopefully all fly to the International Space Station in the next years to come. And of course, there's a lot of preparation needed for that and a lot of guidance, of course. Then we have the crew support team that's part of astronaut operations. Those are the professionals that we have here at ESA to prepare the crews and their families to prepare for a flight, to get everything ready logistically for a space mission, to help them during missions and after missions. So a very, very important role, and they're working very closely with the spouses or the families of the astronauts. And then last but not least, part of our team is the Eurocom team. Those are the famous communicators between the ground station and space station. And we have one team here in Europe. Those are called Eurocoms, very similar to the Capcoms who are in Houston working for the US NASA part of the space station to communicate. And we have our communicators here at the European Astronaut Center to make sure that the astronauts have basically always a well-known, recognized voice to talk to when they do their experiments up on the space station.
Okay, so they support them during their mission on the space station.
Yeah, very closely. So they're here on shift, actually very close to right here where we record this podcast at the European Astronaut Center. Right behind me, behind this wall, is right now a Eurocom on shift working with our colleagues, not only European astronauts, but also NASA colleagues who are doing experiments in the Columbus module on the International Space Station.
So we're right in the heart of the action here. And you already mentioned, so you are also involved in the selection process of the new astronauts and developing the training schedule for them. What would you say are the key qualities that you are looking for in new astronaut recruits, and what skills and competences do they need or develop also here before they can embark on a space mission?
Yeah, it's a quite wide set of skills that we were looking for. That's why in the end, we had 23,000 applicants. And in the end, we had five career astronauts and 12 members of the astronaut reserve that we selected who were also ready to step into training. The career astronaut, they've just passed basic training. So you can already see it's when you look at their... their mission profiles, their training profiles. As an astronaut, you have to be very, very adaptable to potentially non-ideal conditions under which you have to work. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to change your plans in a second. You have to be able to not lose a goal out of your sight, even though it's a few years down the road, right? And you don't want to give up on training too early.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things need to come together, and that's why we had such a wide set of requirements actually for these people when we selected them. I think if I had to put it down in one sentence, then I think as an astronaut, you have to be really good at making the best out of every situation. Even though things might not go as planned, you still want to be able to get the best out of it, meaning to fly this vehicle into space or to perform a science experiment on the space station or to finish a spacewalk, even though some things might go wrong. I think that's the core skill that every astronaut needs to master.
Yeah, and also, yeah, needs to have then once on a mission also, I guess. How do you see the differences between the training of the new astronauts compared to your own training then?
I think in general, the training for the International Space Station is pretty well established. The first missions launched to the ISS in 2000, in the year 2000, meaning for 24 years now, the space station is permanently inhabited in space, which is pretty amazing. And meaning that we have the training program pretty well established. It was way more comprehensive at the beginning because we wanted to make sure that every astronaut who flies up there for half a year is prepared for every possible thing that can happen there, including robotics, extravehicular space activities, all sorts of experiments. And then, and of course, that also includes a lot of maintenance for systems, subsystems of the space station. And then after a while, we learned which of these trainings are really critically important and which are not so important. Maybe maintenance of a part that in the end shows to not fail much or some trainings that can be done on the spot, on orbit, remotely, electronically. And so those things helped us to cut down a bit on training. So in the end, I think now the new astronauts have a little bit of less training.
Okay.
But still, yeah. Their basic training was very similar to ours. A lot of basic subjects that they need, not especially for their missions, but more for a general understanding as a foundation onto which they can build their mission training. And so between our basic training back then in 2009, 10, and 11, we cut back a little bit on some of the subject that we found not so necessary, but increased a few other subjects. And so we streamlined it a bit. Now the basic training here is 1 year, whereas we had 1.5 years. So we cut out a few things. But overall, I think you would see much more similarities than differences.
Yeah. And could you remember from your time, what was your highlight of the training?
Oh, I always like to do operational things. So to get out doing survival training, to understand your own skills, how long you could survive out there without food, how, you know, to learn how to do spacewalks in the real spacesuit. You learn, of course, to do it underwater, and it's hard work. It's at the end of the day, you're really tired, but it's quite rewarding because you get this amazing skill. You get taught by instructor astronauts who have been to space, who have done spacewalks, just as I now train my new colleagues with the skills that I acquired during my spacewalk.
Yeah. And how do you see your personal experiences in space influencing maybe your approach to training and overseeing these new astronauts?
Yeah, my goal is really to lead them in a way as I led my team on orbit when I was commander. And it's actually a quite a unique style of leadership because you're surrounded by very, very talented, skilled people who are very motivated. And so they don't require a lot of leadership in terms of commanding. I mean, even though the word commander implies that, but it's actually not that. Yeah. It's more a servant leadership that you should have or should display as a commander of the space station, making sure that your team has everything they need to do their job properly. And only then, if there's an emergency situation and really things need tight control of a commander, really telling people what to do, then you need to be ready to switch to that mode. But more often than not, you're actually serving your crew. And I try to do it the same way here with my crew of new astronauts, who are very, very skilled and motivated. Every one of them has something they can do a lot better than I can do, or a lot better than the others can. It's a very diverse team, which is amazing to work with. And that is great to see by itself. And I learn a lot from them. But in the end, what I want to make sure is that they have it as easy as possible on their already hard road towards their first mission, and to make sure that they get everything they can. And I give them a lot of, I wouldn't say not necessarily advice, but insight into how I did it, how what things worked for me, which things didn't work. My colleagues of my my astronaut class of 2009, the shenanigans, they helped me out quite a bit there. So they bring in some of their lessons learned from their missions. And that's the way we try to make the new class successful, by helping them to avoid some of the pitfalls that we encountered.
Can you explain a bit more about these pitfalls, or can you give some insights?
Wow, that's actually there's examples. A lot of things, you know. it's there often small details that would require a lot of explanation. But for example, what was very important to me is that before the new class of astronauts start their training at NASA Johnson Space Center, which once they're assigned to a mission, they will spend a lot of time training there. I wanted to make sure that I will lead them there in a separate trip to show them all the places, to make sure they can establish a mental model of that place, to establish a network of people that they know there, that they have this all in place and know how things work there. Some things work differently over there. It's a different culture in a way. And so I wanted to make sure they have everything.
For you at the time, or...
We did actually have a short trip there, but we didn't have a mentor to explain it all. And I think that makes a lot of difference if you not only see a place, but if you have somebody saying, hey, this is how they run things here. Make sure you do this. Make sure you don't do that if you come into these situations. And they appreciated that quite a bit. So we had this we had this trip last December. It was very, very successful. And they got a chance already to do a guest dive, a scuba dive in the NBL, the big neutral buoyancy lab where they train their spacewalks. So a lot of things was quite overwhelming for them. And with that, we were able to take that out of their first training trip, because when they go there next time, no kidding, they have to work there from day one very, very efficiently.
And even for you, did it bring back any memories? So when you went there also to NASA and to all the training facilities?
Yeah, of course. But as an active astronaut, as I am still, I still go there once in a while also for training.
Quite regularly.
I try to get at least once a year into the water, we say into the pool in the spacesuit to do a spacewalk training, just to stay proficient. And so it's not too long ago for me. Also, part of my job is as a team lead of crew operations is to be the immediate family escort during launch campaigns for the immediate family of the astronauts. So I did that for my last two colleagues who flew to space, Andy Morganson and Marcus Wand. I want to make sure that I'm very close with them in quarantine, actually in Houston, and then transferring over to Florida just before their launches. So that's also a time where I spent quite a bit of time in Houston. So it's good for me. Also, it's a good feeling to not lose touch with my many friends and colleagues over there.
Wow. And a lot of responsibility then, working with the astronauts, their families and the counterparts in the US, and a very, very interesting. You mentioned already your class was named the Shenanigans. So now there's this astronaut tradition also that the the previous class is naming the new class of astronauts. So you and your class, you chose the name for the new astronaut class. Can you tell us the name again and how did it come to that? Is there a story behind the name?
Yeah, it's actually quite funny. They revealed that a few days ago during their graduation. That was funny to see how they came to that name. So indeed, we as the Shenanigans named them, but we worked with them to get to that name.
Okay, and it was, they didn't just actually got the name from
one
you.
Of their was one of their choices. They actually quite liked that. It was high up on their list. It's called the Hoppers, and they named themselves, so they chose that name. And we agreed with that because they see themselves hopping on the moon soon.
Yeah.
I think that's their ultimate goal. And I think that's it's a great goal to have.
Yeah.
And they made a patch associated with it. It's actually quite funny. So yeah, it's good to see that those traditions are still alive. And again, also, it's another good sign of how the existing class worked with the new class.
Yeah.
And make sure they get set in the right direction.
Yeah. With this recent graduation of the new astronaut class, what are your thoughts on their future and what will await them? You already mentioned the moon, so what's next for them?
So what's really exciting for them in the next years, of course, is flights to the International Space Station. So we're planning to run ISS on orbit to at least 2030, meaning there's a few really good years to come where right now, since the space station is finished, we're not spending so much effort at building it, but actually much more science can be done. So we have hundreds of experiments in each expedition that will happen, a lot of it coming from Europe, and therefore we need European astronauts to fly there. And that's indeed the first goal of the new class. We hope to all fly them to the International Space Station or a successor of the space station when it comes to that time, to gain experience in low Earth orbit, to learn how to work efficiently in zero gravity, in the hostility of space. You don't always feel it inside a space station, but you have to keep in mind that you're in a very, very dangerous, hostile place when you're on a space station, and everything that's outside of this little hull of that station or outside of that 3 millimeter thick visor of your spacesuit would immediately kill you. That is something that takes a while to get used to work at, and then gain the experience with that to take another step out to be eligible for lunar missions, just as with the current class of the Shenanigans who spent a lot of time on the space station and are now through that eligible to fly on a lunar mission, which is more remote, even more risky, more dangerous. You really want to make sure you're not distracted on those missions by learning how to float in zero gravity or to find your space legs, as we say, in those first days.
Yeah. So for you personally, or also in your role here as the lead for the astronaut operations, what are your main priorities or goals now? Will you also continue to help and guide the new astronaut class?
Yeah, definitely. I think the goals they're shifting a little bit, but getting even more important. So up until now, it was more bringing into the whole class together, making sure that they become a good team, that they're not like distracted by things like competition or anything, because we really made sure they got into an environment where they can thrive, where can build as a team, where they're not feeling in competition with each other, which they're not, which is great because, I mean, they all graduated, they're all eligible for missions, and it's important for us to create those conditions, and that worked really well. We got really good feedback, and also the results are amazing. They all done a fantastic job in their basic training. And so back then, my job was to help them out, to help the training team by giving, tips here and there, a little bit of feedback here and there, helping them to pass the training well and to thrive in there, and giving them a little bit of background information here and there. But now they're shifting into a training mode called pre-assignment training for several of them. They need to learn how to do spacewalks in a real spacesuit. They will travel to NASA, to our international partners, to learn how to work there. They will have more individual training plans. As soon as one of them or several of them are assigned, they will get into a very strict and rigid training flow towards a mission. And so they're all in different situations now, and that requires, you know, different mentoring, individual mentoring, helping them out in their individual strengths, or finding trainings potentially to bump up a skill here and there if required, and to make sure that they have a career plan, that they have something to look forward to, because some of them might fly to the space station as soon as 2 or 3 years from now, but several others might wait, might have to wait for many years. And so it's important that they have a meaningful job, also to find something where they can bring in their already gained experience towards ESA, for example, in the Eurocom team, in the crew support team, in the gateway engineering or cargo return service engineering teams, where they can already be very, very useful with that experience that they gained.
Yeah.
One thing we learned in the past decades of astronautic human spaceflight is that without international cooperation, we don't get anywhere. That was very true in the last decades, where we worked with NASA, with Roscosmos, to send our astronauts to space, because we did not have any chance, and still don't have any chance, to fly humans to space from European soil with the European spacecraft. So we had to work together. We had to contribute something in so-called barter agreements, where we bring something to the table that others want. Like we brought Columbus, the European Space Lab, to the International Space Station, which also helps our NASA colleagues. And we brought got the European robotic arm on the space station to help our Russian colleagues. And so we traded our capabilities. So it was very, very critical. Also in training, every astronaut who ever flew to the space station trained here in Europe at the European Astronaut Center. Not only the Europeans, so every astronaut comes here. It's mandatory. Yeah. And so our astronauts do the same. They train in the US, in Russia, in Japan, in Canada. They do that. It's very, very international. At the same time, we realize that right now a shift is taking place, since the cooperation between big agencies is retracting a little bit, retreating a little bit for the low Earth orbit, which is then replaced by companies, for example, like SpaceX, who can do things on their own quite a bit. They have enormous capabilities. And in order to stay relevant in a new sort of working regime like that, we really have to bring more to the table as Europeans than we did in the past, and develop own capabilities that we can bring to the table to enable international cooperation also in the future. That is a very important shift that we shall not miss. If we miss it, then honestly, there's a big danger that we become irrelevant at the table of the big space nations. Looking around us, many other space nations can bring humans to space. It's China, Russia, US, soon India. And I think we really need to make sure that we stay on top of those developments in order to remain relevant, meaning like self-determined capabilities as an enabler for future international cooperation.
Taking part in the basic training, we also have Catherine, so astronaut candidate from the Australian Space Agency. So how was that for you? It was the first time that we have someone joining the full basic training from another space agency.
Oh, it was fantastic actually to have Catherine in the team, just as the other ones. She's a great, really talented individual. And honestly, to me, in the team, it didn't make much difference. I treated her like the others. You know, I think this is in the spirit of international cooperation, just as I was treated by my crewmates when we trained to fly to space, just like brothers or family. And that's, you know, that's my spirit here that I want to establish, and it worked really well to have her in the team. Honestly, it takes me once in a while to think of that she's actually here for a different reason than the career astronauts. She's here as a commercial trainee for basic training, and I think, you know, we just talked about international cooperation. I think it's a good sign of how we advance in this new space world, where commercial services play a bigger role. And I think it's really good that ESA has made a step forward by starting that. I think this is a new thing in the world of space training. So I think it was a very good example of, you know, how do you move in this new world to bring in Catherine.
Yeah. And now, reflecting on your own experience as an astronaut, what advice would you offer to these new graduates and as they embark on their journey into space now one day?
Well, as we talked before, you know, it's not about big pieces of advice that I stand in front of them and let them know. It's more the fine details. Often they come to me with questions, and for me, it's a great honor and privilege to try and find the answers with them. But if you ask that question targeted at the new phase that they come in right now, finalizing basic training, being in pre-assignment training, potentially waiting for an assignment for that call from the director general to get assigned to a space mission. It's easy at this stage as an astronaut to get focused on that goal because you've invested a lot. You left your fantastic previous career. You left it for good. You left it behind in order to... Yeah, it's sort of a gamble on a new career in order to learn something new. And you only feel that process as completed once you are in space on your first mission. I understand that. It was very similar for me. Only then you can be sure that this risk that you took has paid off, that you're not stuck in this new career, maybe not flying to space for one or other reason. You know, there might be a technical problem just before launch. You might be a health problem keeps you from flying it. So in that case, all that investment would have, you could see it as failed, right? So really the ultimate goal, of course, of all of our new colleagues is to fly.
Yeah.
But if you only have that one goal in mind, then it's easy to lose sight of how fantastic and amazing this journey is. And this is really something that I talk to them, and it's good to see that they also see it like that. Is that what comes now is an amazing time of a training that no other person on Earth can get in this way. Basically, you get paid to work underwater in a spacesuit to learn
That's
how
worse.
To fly a robotic arm, to learn how to fly an aircraft.
Yeah.
You get training in survival skills. You get training in medical skills. You get training in maintenance and repairs. All those things are, to me, very, very amazing.
Yeah.
And so I guess one piece of advice that I would have, and that in hindsight was also relevant for me, is to not lose sight of how amazing this journey is right now, and to enjoy every minute, hour, day, and month of this time, even though you're not assigned yet.
That's actually very, very good advice also for other parts of your life or careers. You already said that it's very, very rewarding for yourself also to be in this position. Have there been any challenges as well?
Yeah, for me it was new to lead such a big team. Right now I have 19 people in the team. As a commander, you only have six, right? Roughly, depending on the size of your crew. So I had to get used to that. Of course, I had the advantage that I once led this team when it was much smaller in 2015 for a year. The crew support team,
right,
before I was then assigned to my second space flight. So I had to actually leave the team leadership there. But I already got a little bit of insight in there. And of course, I think on a day-to-day basis, the challenge is that the topics are wildly different for the three sub-teams, and there's a lot of things coming up. And that's, of course, sometimes challenging to keep a good overview of things. But then, having said that, I do have a fantastic team, and they are really experienced. In many ways, they're way more experienced than me. And so I always have and find a good team member who I can trust with, who will jump in and who, you know, already know what there is to do. And that, I have to say, it's fantastic to work with a team like that, who is so capable and so skilled and so motivated.
Yeah. And with you being kind of a mentor or tutor or leader for the new astronauts and other teams, are you still in contact maybe with some mentors that you had at the time?
Let me think. Actually, unfortunately, not very often. Once in a while, I do talk with my, well, former heroes, now friends and colleagues and still heroes, like Thomas Reiter, Ulf Merbold. Sigmund Jähn was a good friend of mine until he passed away. It was quite often that we exchanged, that we called each other, and he was at both my launches. It was very important to me, and he was a very humble person, so he did not often actively give advice, but if you asked him, you could realize that this is a treasure to speak to him. And in a way, it's the same with my other colleagues. Unfortunately, I don't see them very often. This job keeps me very busy, and I travel a lot. And they're also, even though they're retired, they're really busy. I think this is a sort of a professional disease that you have, is that you always look beyond the horizon to see what's out there, and of course they do that. So not often we see each other, but once in a while, usually once a year, we have a meeting, the Association of Space Explorers meeting, where many of the experienced astronauts are there, people who walked on the moon that we exchange with on a regular basis. I am in contact with Harrison Schmidt once in a while. Both him and I are geologists, geophysicists. So
You have something to talk about.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. Unfortunately, there's not so many of them alive anymore, of this wealth and treasure of experience. But to tap into this, to talk to them, how they did things, how things did not work out on the moon, right? It's a lot of stuff that we need to learn from them for our upcoming missions to the moon. That's, to me, very, very rewarding and amazing.
Yeah, wow. And now you're the one passing wisdom and advice on to the next generation. And speaking of maybe even the next generation after that, for aspiring astronauts and those interested in working in the space field or space industry one day, do you have any advice for those?
Well, I can only say how I did it, and it miraculously worked out. I'm not sure if this is a sure thing, but it's what always was important to me is that I did what I liked, what amazed me, what motivated me. And that way, I became a scientist. That way, I got to Antarctica 5 times. It's just one of my favorite places on Earth is actually Antarctica, and I worked there on active volcanoes, which always fascinated me. So I think what I
more than
did,
the space station, you prefer Antarctica?
I said on Earth.
On Earth, true, right.
It's true. The space station was on a different scale.
Yeah.
But what I always did is I never hesitated when I saw an opportunity come up. And I found that many opportunities in life, they only open for a very short window. Mm. And if you hesitate too long, this window might be closed.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of my properties that I never took more than a few seconds to say yes if I saw an opportunity come up.
Yeah.
And I think if you're consistent at doing that, you will end up at an amazing place.
Mm. Great. Wow. Okay, now I have some other few quick questions for you. The new astronauts told me that they had a great team dynamic during training and many fun moments together during training. Could you think of a fun training moment or fun bonding moment when you were in training with your classmates?
We had hundreds of those. And I think it's a great property of, you know, astronaut humor, which I see across the board. If you're in a difficult situation, it might be, you know, during survival training after having not eaten for 5 days, or if you're at language training at an intensive course for 1 month locked in somewhere in a basement of a building, it's not fun, right? But you make the best out of it by, you know, having good humor. And for the shenanigans, that's actually how our name came about. We were not named by the predecessors because there was no class in place at ESA. And so we named ourselves, and that was a very fitting name. Is that because we always played practical jokes on each other. But what those jokes were is that we didn't make fun of each other, but you know, with each other. That was a very inclusive humor, and people, you know, made the best jokes about themselves. And I think that was amazing. That helped us all to get through that tough time of basic training. And I see it very, very similar with the new class. So it's, I think it's something in the genes of astronauts.
And do you have a favorite space related quote or saying that resonates with you and keeps you inspired for your journey?
Oh, wow. I think one quote that I have to keep thinking of, it's not a space quote, but it fits very well for space. It's from a Greek philosopher called Plutarch, who said, "The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lit."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every time I speak to children or parents who tell me that, you know, their daughter saw me on television on the space station and now she wants to become an astronaut or an engineer or a scientist, you know, that is a very, very big compliment for me. And I think that is it's an important way of how we do our work, is that we don't always only talk about science and technology and international cooperation, but that we acknowledge that inspiration is one of the most important things that we can do for the future of our own country or continent.
And
I think that's well phrased in that sentence of Plutarch. The other, a bit more exploration related phrase that keeps floating through my mind is actually a quote from Moby Dick, from that book, and where he describes himself as being tormented by an everlasting itch for things remote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, if you want to put me into one sentence, that's it.
That's it. Itching consistently.
Yeah. And then trying to get to places where that itch stops a little bit.
Have you found it yet? Is it?
Well, no. But it's those places are always beyond the horizon.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exactly why we called my second space mission Horizons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what's on the horizon next for our class of astronauts is of course the moon. It's an amazing destination that I think is in the hearts of every human, probably. I think every human has had moments where they looked up into space and wondered, how is it to be up there and look back at our planet? I think I cannot imagine that there was a human who has not had that thought.
Probably not. And it will continue, I guess. I'm sure actually that this question will last. So thank you very much, Alex. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us and share your stories.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. An everlasting itch for things remote. I think I can relate to that. What adventures do you imagine lie beyond your horizon? Stay connected with Alexander on social media, where you can find him at astro_alex on X and astro_alex_isa on Instagram. To learn more about our astronaut class of 2022, head over to the official ESA Exploration blog at blogs.esa.int/exploration. You can join the conversation on X at ESA Spaceflight using the hashtag ESA Explores. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe and share on your favorite podcast platform and on ESA's YouTube channel. Stay tuned for our next episodes, and thank you for listening to ESA Explores.